Happy New Year and welcome to episode 86 of the Unstoppable Podcast. My name is Dan J. Gregory and I am committed to hunting down the secrets of business mastery and human performance. My goal for the Unstoppable Podcast is to share insights from some of the most successful entrepreneurs, inspiring thought leaders, world-class athletes and prominent celebrities to help you to become unstoppable in business and life. Each week, I'll be bringing you a new interview with an inspiring person and sharing my own results as I pursue the answers to the question, how can I create the ultimate edge in my business, make a significant impact, and live an extraordinary life? Hello, happy new year, and welcome to episode 86 of the Unstoppable Podcast, the very first episode of 2017. It's great to be back. I hope you enjoyed the New Year celebrations and that you are fired up to make 2017 your very best year yet. Today's episode marks the beginning of a special New Year transformation series, and I have an incredible guest for you to launch into the new year, the Unstoppable Way. We're going to walk through a 7-step process during this episode for radical life change. And there's no better time to be thinking about the changes you want to make in your life than the new year. My special guest today seriously brings the goods, so stay tuned to find out more about who we have on today's show. But before I dive in, let's take a moment to check in. It's been almost exactly 1 month since the previous episode of the Unstoppable Podcast, which was published on the 1st of December with Patrick Bet-David, one of the best episodes that I've had on the show so far. The episode was entitled Igniting the Entrepreneurial Spirit, and it was a truly powerful session. Patrick is an incredible human being who is a beacon of inspiration to others who want to achieve great things in their lifetime. So be sure, if you haven't already listened to that episode with Patrick, episode 85, do take a listen. So now, where have you been, Dan? I hear you ask. Well, firstly, I spent 2 weeks in Sri Lanka with my partner, Lizzie, and we took a proper holiday. You know, the kind where you take no work with you. I mean, zero work. It was mind-blowing and a great rest, of course, but a mind-blowing trip, a transformational trip in many ways. And I have so many lessons to share with you, not only in terms of the business lessons that I learned from immersing myself in a very different culture and observing the people of Sri Lanka, but also in terms of a deeply profound personal insight into who I am. And, you know, I spent time diving fully into Eastern culture and philosophy. And it was really an eye-opening experience and often a breathtaking experience. So I'll be sharing my journey and breaking down all my insights for you over the course of the next few weeks on my solo round. So be sure to subscribe to the show if you've not done so already to make sure that you do not miss out on this. Now, we got back to the UK on the 21st of December. And it felt like we'd parachuted into a totally different world, having spent time in a third world country. And it's amazing how quickly that you acclimatized to a different culture and climate. You know, we were just there for 2 weeks. You know, but when we came back, got off the plane in London, we were hit by the cold, the Christmas frenzy, and back into the Western way of life. You know, checking back into Facebook, I'd taken a break from Facebook during those 2 weeks. It hit me hard. You know, the sound of screaming Sri Lankans at the marketplace was rapidly replaced by the narcissistic, attention-seeking noise of the West on Facebook. And I've got a whole lot to say about that over the coming weeks too. So watch this space. And then when we got back into the UK, we jumped straight back into the festive season, embraced Christmas with our families, and soar in the new year with high hopes of 2017. So effectively, I've had a month-long holiday. And I can tell you directly that I was not prepared for this for many reasons, as good as it sounds. Firstly, I didn't intend to take a holiday from the podcast. I had a whole series of interviews lined up that were due to be put in the system, ready to be published on autopilot whilst I was away. However, being one who seems to rarely make things easy for oneself, I became completely overloaded prior to the holiday. During this time, we moved house. I was building a product launch to be ready for when I came back. And of course, I still had business as usual in terms of running the podcast, my business programs, my coaching calls. So just 24 hours to go before the deadline for publishing the episodes. And with none of them completed, I had to make the decision that the podcast would also be taking a holiday with me. So that's why there's been a complete absence of the Unstoppable podcast for the previous month. This is the first time I've taken a prolonged holiday. The second reason why I was not prepared for the month off is because at this present moment in time, my business is geared around specific scheduled launches, and my income is contingent upon this. So this was nagging at me frequently over the month of December whilst I was away, because aside from having the regular rolling payments from existing clients, I was not bringing any new revenue into the business. And this is a scary thought and an area for me of immediate focus in 2017. Now, having studied The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss repeatedly, it's probably the most weathered book on my bookshelf. Naturally, I fell in love with the concept of mini retirements, and you know, this 4-week holiday effectively resembled the kind of 4-hour work week style mini retirement that he describes. But I learned the hard way that these only work if the revenue continues to come in on autopilot day in, day out, if you want any sense of peace of mind, that is. So the words automated, subscription-based, and membership program will all become very important to me in 2017. I'm too involved in every stage of the process of running my business. My presence is currently required, mandatory, for every single role within the business, from marketing to sales to product delivery to administration to cleaning and coffee making. This makes my business more of a job than a business. Robert Kiyosaki was right. It's time to build a company and take myself out of the equation somewhat and go from being the business operator to becoming the business owner in 2017. So there's plenty more in this to come. But now let's focus on the very first episode of the New Year Transformation Series. I'm so excited for this session. Our special guest today is Derek Rydell. Derek is part of a new generation of spiritual visionaries and thought leaders, and he is the author of the number one Amazon Barnes & Noble's bestseller, Emergence, 7 Steps for Radical Life Change. And he is the world's number one expert on the revolutionary law of emergence. He has trained top executives at Fortune 500 companies, from American Express to Disney, in empowered leadership and communications, and he has coached celebrities and media professionals, including Oscar and Emmy winners, on creating conscious entertainment. As a regular contributor to Huffington Post and host of the top-rated Emergence podcast on iTunes, Derek reveals cutting-edge mindset and spiritual principles and success strategies to achieve financial freedom and abundance, master productivity and creativity, and gain true wealth and happiness. With his global platform, Derek has touched hundreds of thousands around the planet with his message on finding your path, living your purpose, and making a powerful impact. In this episode, Derek Rydell walks us through the law of emergence and each of the 7 steps for radical life change. I'm so pumped for this episode. It's one I will go back to over and over again. So get ready, take out a notepad. You're going to want to take notes. I'm absolutely delighted to introduce you to Derek and his work. Let's get straight into it. It's time to emerge as your best self in 2017. Please welcome Derek Rydell. Derek, a huge welcome to the Unstoppable podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have you here as part of this transformation series kicking off 2017 with style. Big welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Dan. It's my true honor and pleasure to be here. I mean, I love the idea and the possibility of what it really means to be unstoppable. You know, unstoppable, unshakable, unsinkable, unbreakable.
Amazing. I love it.
I'm all in, man. I'm all in.
I love it. And as we go through, we'll get your definition of what unstoppable means to you. But to kick us off, would you mind just sharing a little bit about what your work is all about and what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, well, I'm mostly known for a principle I coined in a sort of a process called the law of emergence. And it's just based on a core principle of emergence, which is that life is emergent. We know this now from quantum physics. We know that every seed that shows up on the planet already brings with it everything it's supposed to ultimately reveal, and that the seed doesn't go out and, you know, attract or achieve a tree. It's already in the seed. It just, when the conditions are right and they match the pattern in the seed, its potential naturally emerges. And through my own journey of almost dying twice, addictions to drugs and alcohol, and just a crazy journey of self-improvement and success. I had a moment of when I almost died, I had an awareness that most of the ways we try to grow and succeed are actually backwards to how we were designed to grow and succeed. And that's when I discovered this thing of emergence. And I went from being broke and suicidal and living on 19 cents boxes of macaroni and cheese in a one-room apartment to, you know, my whole life starting to work and, you know, building a seven-figure business and million-dollar homes and global travel and all these things that I've been struggling and almost dying to achieve. And so what I help people do is to get back in touch with that seed of genius, that seed of power and potential that's already planted within them, that they brought with them, and then how to bring their life into integrity with that, so that that potential that they brought with them, that purpose, can naturally unfold and emerge in their life, often in ways they can't imagine, and with less of the stress and the struggle that usually accompanies most other, you know, techniques and approaches to growth and success. So I help people get in touch with that seed, get in touch with that pattern, that purpose, and then design a way of life that makes it inevitable that it could unfold.
Wow, Derek, that's fascinating. That's really interesting, because just today I interviewed a gentleman called Christian Thompson for the UK who is all about helping people become superhuman. And he talks about a very similar analogy in terms of the human being born with a certain pattern of DNA, but then it's all the environmental factors that then will have an impact on the growth of us as human beings in terms of our health, our well-being, and how we operate. And I love the way they use the acorn as the symbol, because it's very similar. You know, if you put an acorn in the right soil, then it will grow and become something magnificent. But if you don't give it the nutrients and the environment that it requires, then a very different outcome is possible. So I'm fascinated to speak more about that. But before we do that, would you mind sharing a little about that kind of near-death experience that you had? I talk a lot with my guests about defining moments, and that strikes me as a really defining moment. I'd be really curious to know a little more about that.
It definitely was a defining moment. And there was a couple of those moments. You know, I had struggled for many, many years to improve my life and get over childhood, or at least through my perception, and achieve success and all that. And after a decade or more of struggling for self-improvement, the only thing I'd improved was my ability to describe why my life was so messed up. You know, I had a lot of improvement in my ability to describe why things didn't work, but things were still not working. And as I said, there was so much pain around trying to make my life work that I got addicted to drugs and alcohol. Wow. And I almost died of an overdose. And I remember lying in the emergency room with the IV snaking out of my arm and the doctor telling me I'm lucky to be alive. And I didn't feel lucky. I didn't feel lucky to be alive. And I didn't take that as good news. But I couldn't understand how all my efforts to make my life work had literally almost ended my life. And my brother always said I had a thick skull, a big head. And you know, so the universe, even though it took a 2x4 to my head that day, it wasn't quite enough to crack me open. So I just figured I need to work harder. I need to work smarter. I redoubled my efforts. I dug in, and things got a little bit better for a little while. And then while I was doing a movie in Jamaica, everything went sideways again, a messy breakup. The film started going sideways. They fired the director, fired the lead actress, and we had to reshoot the entire movie. And I just was in such a place of disillusionment, I decided I was going to go diving in a coral reef on my own, which was the first mistake. And the second mistake was I prayed to get lost from everything else. Oh, wow. And very, very quickly, I got terribly lost in this coral reef and eventually trapped in a pocket of fire coral and spike coral that looked like an underwater booby-trapped tomb out of an Indiana Jones movie. Gosh. I mean, it was frightening. Just all these rows of razor sharp coral spikes, inches from my face, my throat, my neck, my stomach. And I couldn't look up out of the water to see where I was, or my body would have been skewered. I couldn't swim down because there was no room and I would have just been skewered. I couldn't touch the sides of the wall to get any kind of balance because it was covered in fire coral that was like the equivalent of 1,000 jellyfish stings. Yeah. And if I would have touched it, I would have just, you know, went right into those spikes and that would have been it. I would have been chum for the sharks that were also in the water. And little, like, the sand sharks started swimming around beneath me, and I was stuck in this for a long time. And my mind went through all kinds of scenarios of how I might get saved, and eventually I ran through those. And then it went through all these unconscious patterns of self-loathing and how could I be so stupid, and, you know, and I realized all of this had always been in my unconscious, but now it was all just coming up. And to say I was in hell is an understatement. And at a certain point, I got to the end of all those tapes, and it was like there was nothing left. Like one of those old reel-to-reels where it just kind of goes off the reel and goes, yeah, like,
I can imagine.
And there was this emptiness and this profound realization that I wasn't going to make it out of this. And all that was left for me to do was to surrender. And it wasn't, you know, God, if you get me out of this, I promise to go to church on Sunday. You know, I'd already tried to bargain and the universe wasn't cutting deals.
Yeah.
It was a real unconditional letting go. And in that instant, something finally cracked open in me. And I saw like a vision or an awareness that this self that I've been trying to fix and improve and achieve, he was a fictional character, an amalgamation of societal pressures, peer pressures, parental fantasy, and nothing I ever would do would ever make him enough. And right behind that, there was the real me. And all I could say was that this real me had never been hurt, so he didn't need to be fixed. And he was already whole and complete, so he could not be improved upon.
Wow.
And it was just a flicker, a flash. And in the next moment, I was out of that pocket. And I don't know if I literally walked on water, because there was nowhere to put, I couldn't like jump, stand on anything to get out of it. But the next moment I popped out of it and was standing on the coral outside of the, where I could look back where I'd been stuck. And the exit was inches from me the whole time. And
crazy.
This labyrinth became like a metaphor, a maze, for my whole life. You know, I'd been swimming through this maze, following all these brightly colored things, trying to distract myself from the real pain I was in, until eventually I got stuck and I was drowning and gasping for air. That was a description for my life up to that point. And I was drowning and I didn't know it. I was gasping for air and I didn't know it. And I was stuck in this maze following every brightly colored thing to try to distract myself, and I didn't know it. And in that moment of blinding clarity, I could see it all. Wow. And everything had this luminosity to it, and everything was shimmering with energy. And I ended up pulling out of society, and I was going to become a monk. And that didn't work out too well. I tried the monk life. I was silent and fasting for the first time ever. And like 3 or 4 days into it, I was freaked out, and I broke into the monk's kitchen and stole food out of the refrigerator in the middle of the night. And, you know, like some little feral creature scurrying out of the forest, you know, opening up this big freezer, refrigerator, like enough so that the light doesn't go on, because they were literally down the hall sleeping. And then I just realized, you know, the monastic life probably wasn't for me. And I cloistered myself in my apartment and went on this inner journey to understand what happened in that coral reef. What was that insight? And that's where I discovered this idea that everything is already in the acorn. The oak is already in the acorn. The apple tree is already in the apple seed. But not only is the apple tree in the apple seed, an entire orchards upon orchards of apple trees are in the apple seed. And it was like I suddenly had this awareness and this clarity. And then I went back and read old spiritual, religious, philosophical texts, the Bible, the Buddhism, all these things. And for the first time, actually understood it.
Wow.
And just suddenly all these mysteries and enigmas of metaphysics and mysticism and religion and philosophy, all the shroud of mystery around it all, because of the, you know, the dogma and the doctrine and all the different cultural ways that people express themselves throughout the ages, all of that just kind of dissolved, and I could begin to perceive what's called the perennial teaching.
Wow.
The truth, the teaching of truth principle.
Amazing.
And I could see that that was universal, that all these philosophies and religions we're actually teaching fundamentally the same principles for successful living. Mm. And that's when I, you know, began my journey of sharing and teaching and things really began to turn around.
Wow, Derek, thank you for sharing that. And I think one thing I'll just say, a disclaimer to the listeners, you don't have to go and follow Derek's footsteps and go and get yourself stuck in a coral, because he's going to unravel it for us today on the show, I hope, so that you don't have to have that kind of experience.
Wouldn't
wish that on anyone. But in those moments, when you're trapped underwater, how long are we talking? Was that minutes? Because I just can't even imagine what your brain must have been, how fast your brain must have been operating. But how did it feel in terms of your thoughts coming you fast? Was it like a slow thought? Did life slow down? Yeah. What was it like?
At first, it sped up and it was panic and, you know, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, so there was that. And then as I realized, I had to breathe in these short staccato breaths, because if I breathed too deeply, I would have been punctured. And I had to swim to keep my level in the water with the tips of my fingers. Gosh. Because if I did an actual stroke, I would have pushed my body right into these spikes.
Crazy.
So it was a panic at first, and then it was, you know, all these thoughts started coming up, and I had flashes of like imagining I had already drowned, and everybody was on the beach, and they were all sort of mourning my death as the paramedics zipped up the bag and carted me off. And I even had a moment where I envisioned that the cover of the Hollywood trade magazines would have the story, you know, promising young actor cut down too short in life, you know, and all this stuff. And so it's funny, even in my last gasp of breath, the ego was still seeking its 15 minutes of fame. Wow. So there was kind of like the life flashing before me, right? And then there was awareness of my breath and awareness of my heartbeat and awareness that nobody knew I was out there and nobody was coming to save me. And then all my scenarios and all of my tricks and everything just fell away. Mm. And there was an awareness that I wasn't going to make it.
Wow.
And then there was the surrender.
Yeah.
And then it all cracked open.
During that surrender moment, did you feel like peace? What did that feel like? Or was it just so instantaneous?
It was so quick that as I'm feeling into it right now, I'm aware there is this moment of complete release.
Wow.
But then in the very next moment, yeah. I was like
out of there.
Yeah. So, but then everything afterwards had this shimmering quality to it. So something, you know, it was like everything was just now, I don't usually share this part of the story, but, you know, what the heck? I mean, people might think it's really weird, but that night in my hotel room, you know, I mean, it was such a radical shift. And I had a moment where I fell on my knees in like partly gratitude, but also just this overwhelming tidal wave of emotion that felt like it was from the depths of my being, from like all the way, you know, all the grief I'd ever felt, all the sadness, all the parts of me that had been trying to hold everything together, the dam just broke loose.
Wow.
And I fell forward. And again, who knows what really happened, but I literally fell forward. It was so intense, the emotion, the energy. And my experience was that something caught me.
Wow.
And I was literally hanging suspended, leaning forward while in my hands kind of in the air as if somebody was holding my hands and not letting me fall over. It was profound, man. And it just kept unfolding, you know, after that sort of incredible release.
Wow.
Just insight started to unfold. And then, like I said, I, you know, was going to go become a monk. And, you know, it was that radical of a departure. I mean, I went from being, you know, a guy that was partying all the time and to like going to be a monk. I mean, that was how big the shift was.
Absolutely. And when did you make the decision that you would take the path that you're on now, and what led to that decision?
Yeah. So, you know, then I was in my apartment. I didn't do the monk thing, but I kind of did the monk thing just in my apartment and, cut myself off from TV and news and got rid of a lot of books and everything. And just kind of was in this space of introspection for quite a long time. Mm. And as I emerged out of that, you know, I dabbled in various things and, you know, something I didn't realize how it would all support me, but I got involved in a variety of entrepreneurial, you know, efforts, creative endeavors, you know, as a screenwriter, as maybe still checking out the acting thing, as a multi-level marketer, you know, I was suddenly just drawn in all these different directions.
And
was successful in variety of them at certain levels. And then there was a book that I ended up writing about the entertainment industry and sort of conscious entertainment and media. And then that led to some consulting stuff. And then that led to me beginning to do my first online kind of build out of what that might look like, teaching courses and stuff. Wow. And some of that worked and a lot of it failed. And I was doing my multi-level marketing thing, and then I got good at, and I learned how to get up and speak and teach and sell, and that started to succeed. But then, you know, so like all these little pieces, and then as I did that, as I honored and went for it fully, little bit by little bit, those pieces fell away, and the real vision of what I was supposed to do got clearer and clearer and clearer. And then I saw that everything I'd learned in all these strange zigzaggy journey was all going to be used for the bigger mission.
Absolutely.
All those little dead ends and blind alleys, or so they seemed, were developing capacities and skills and abilities in me, and also showing me a lot of places where I was stuck, where I had limited beliefs, where I, you know, I hated sales and marketing because I had so much judgment about it. And it showed the underlying kind of shadows and values conflicts and all these things. And I got to work on all of that along the way. And then eventually it all coalesced. Wow. As I began to teach. And I was practicing these principles of emergence, but not teaching them necessarily.
Yes.
Until I started to see a lot of results. And then it all kind of congealed around the vision that I'm now doing, you know, today.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think the one thing I take from that is that, and I'm so pleased you shared those parts of the journey, because I'm working with a small group of entrepreneurs right now, and I don't even know if it's a real term, but I call it the fear of permanence, and that what you're doing right now and the decisions you're making right now, people have this false sense that once they make that decision that cuts off everything for life. You know, they feel like that's who they're going to be, and without realizing that it's just part of the journey, and it's one step will lead to another, and if you pivot, then you'll pivot again, and you'll pivot again, and eventually, as you've discovered, you will emerge on the path that, you know, is your true north. You will find that path. So I really honor you for sharing that, because so many people get so wrapped up in what should I be doing right now, and is it the right thing, rather than just allowing it to be and allow it to unfold so that they can experience whether it's the right way or not, you know.
Exactly. That is actually one of the biggest pitfalls to the entrepreneurial life, is this question of, am I doing the right thing? Is this, you know, and then if you get into like the spiritual or personal development circles of entrepreneurs, then it's like, is this my ego talking or my spirit talking? And should, you know, it starts to, you know, has layers of resistance to it. And the way it works is, it's an interesting irony, because on one hand, you have to be continuously flexible and available to the real and spontaneous emergence of what's true for you in any moment, let alone any day, let alone any year. You have to be constantly open and available to the revelation or the breakthrough or the new guidance. But at the same time, again, you have to also be willing to be fully committed to the direction you're in. And so it's an interesting, ironic balance, because real growth and change does not come about unless you are committed all the way through to the other side of a particular goal. What most people do is they hit all these thresholds along the way. Oh, it's too hard. Oh, I'm scared. It's not working. Maybe this is the wrong way. Maybe this is the wrong thing. Maybe I'm wrong. And then they pull back away, and they try a different way. And then they hit the same thresholds. Yep. They don't realize that they're just ego thresholds, and they pull back and they try another way, or they pull back and let the momentum die. And then they start up again a few months later. And what they are is like a plane circling the runway, but the minute it starts to get liftoff speed and the cockpit is shaking because they don't understand that's not a sign that something's wrong. That's a sign you're on the verge of liftoff. Then you pull back on the throttle and you circle the runway again. Mm-hmm. And that's why the average person doesn't really live 70 to 90 years. They live the same year 70 to 90 times.
Yes.
Because they're constantly changing directions, programs, relationships, hopefully their underwear, you know, but they're constantly changing. And they're not what the Zen teaching says, take the one seat, which means sit there and don't move for a period of time, no matter what comes up. You know, it's like Buddha under the Bodhi tree, all the demons are tempting him, and he just keeps sitting, keeps sitting, keeps sitting. Sit through those fears and temptations and boredom and frustration, and all of that will get transmuted into new insight, new power. And it's important to know that your conditions do not determine your destiny. Your character determines your destiny. And your character is built out of your habits. And your habits are developed through what you are consistently committed to. Mm. And what you commit to is based on the intention or vision for your life. So you can change the course of your destiny, but you have to build your character. And that only comes from saying, okay, I'm going to write this book, or I'm going to build this coaching practice, or I'm going to, whatever the case may be. I'm inspired and I feel it and I want it. And now I'm going to commit to it, and I'm going to give myself a period of time, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. And I'm going to do everything I need to get to that result.
Absolutely.
No matter what, during this period of time, no matter what, I'm not going to stop. And that's scary to people. Yeah. And it brings up all these shadows and things, you know. But when I decided to do that, because I was guilty of this, believe me. Mm. I can only speak with it from passion and authority because I really, really understand that pattern.
Yes.
I was always I was that guy, you know, following the brightly colored objects. Mm. And when I finally caught this principle that I was circling the runway and never getting liftoff speed, I made this commitment. I'm going to focus on this. I'm not going to stop with this law of emergence thing. I'm choosing this path, and I'm going to stay on it for the next 18 months, no matter what.
Awesome.
And I hit all those thresholds, and then, you know, things began to break through finally, and I got real momentum and real progress.
Wow. I think this is going to lead us nicely into kind of describing the law of emergence, but I love the analogy of the plane. You know, again, I've used that analogy myself in terms of, are you on the wrong flight to the wrong destination, or are you just afraid of the turbulence? Because if your flight is heading the right way, you've got to expect the turbulence and just ride it out, because you will reach the right destination. But if you're feeling uncomfortable because you realize you've boarded the wrong plane and you're heading the wrong way, then that's a different thing. But if you're just feeling tension because the plane is shaking and you're in that tough zone, you're feeling resistance, you just got to go through it, because you will come out the other side and you will reach the destination.
Yeah. And I wanted to say one other thing to that, Dan, if I can, because I want to even go one step further and give people some hope and understand that even if you are, you know, eventually going to discover you went in the wrong direction,
mm.
if you have given yourself a significant or a sufficient period of commitment, even if you write the wrong book or build the wrong product, or, you know, if you are all in and you really do the work to be committed and to also acknowledge everything that's coming up, you know, because the only way that you can really transform and make real progress is commitment.
Absolutely.
And then it creates this mandala, this context or container where real, like a pressure cooker, where something can really start cooking. Mm. If you keep having all these leaks in the pressure cooker, or you keep opening the lid to see if it's working, then you actually, it will never cook.
Yeah.
So what happens is, if you're really in your sincere intention and you're really doing it, even if you end up ultimately the wrong thing, like for me, multi-level marketing was not the right thing. For me, some of the consulting things I built were not the right thing, but because I committed and stayed the course,
yes,
I developed some capacity in my character resilience, yeah. resilience, stamina, stick-to-itiveness. I broke through my fears and lack of confidence and grew self-esteem. You can't build self-esteem or self-worth unless you are making and keeping commitments.
Impossible. Yeah, and you're right. So, I think that's the kind of piece I was referring to in terms of that fear of permanence, because if you stay on the plane, when the plane lands, you can ultimately get on another plane if it wasn't the right place. You just got to get to the destination first. You know, if you've taken the wrong airline, you can get back on another plane and go somewhere else.
And the way life works is life wants to put you in the right place. Understand that there's a principle going on in the universe, in the world, and you know, just like in nature, that it needs you to be in the right place so that you can fulfill the function that you were created for. Just like every other species in an ecosystem, everything has a purpose and a function, and left to its own devices, the ecosystem falls into perfect order and balance, and everything does its job. Life is trying to put you in the right place so that you can serve your purpose and function in the greater human ecosystem. And if you are all in and you're committed and you're growing and you're transforming, if that environment is not the right place or that relationship, life will move you.
Yes.
Because it needs you to be you. And it's a trusting of that process.
Awesome. I think this kind of really leads nicely into the next part. I'd like to talk about the law of emergence. I know the first component of that is having the complete vision. Would you mind walking us through the law of emergence, introducing what it means and how people can apply it to their lives?
Absolutely. And so as I was talking about before, the basic principle of the law of emergence is described as when the conditions match the pattern already in the seed, then its potential naturally emerges. Mm. So we see that everywhere in nature, and we understand in quantum physics the same thing applies. It's a field of infinite ideas or patterns or potential, what Plato called the realm of perfect forms. So there's a quantum field of ideas, patterns, etc. And through the observer effect, which means through observation, intention, focus, we collapse the field of infinite possibilities into a specific actuality called experience, called a creation of some form. So the same principle we see in nature, we see in quantum physics, and it basically boils down to that there's already an idea, a pattern, a purpose, a potential planted within you. And when you create the congruent conditions for that, your life starts to naturally emerge. And that's what, you know, step one in the what I call the emergeneering process, which is about engineering your emergence, is you have to have a vision. You have to see clearly where you want to go. Now, you don't have to see it in complete, total, every detail of it, but you have to have a passionate direction. And because if you don't know where you're going, every road will take you there and you'll be lost. Mm. And if you're not living your purpose, you are living someone else's, believe me. Your parents, the society, whatever. And so you got to get anchored in that seed of potential that's already in you. And I walk people through, maybe we'll talk about it very specifically, how to tap into and discover what is that seed.
Mm.
And I have a particular ability in a matter of minutes to help people discover that when they might have been struggling their whole life to understand it. But so there's that. And then once you know what the seed is, just like a gardener or a farmer, once they know what the seed is, they know what conditions to cultivate. So now you know what the seed is. Now you begin to design a way of life that brings you increasingly into harmony or integrity with that seed. So that means, for example, on a very basic level, if part of your seed, part of your potential is to have a life of abundance, and you know that if you have a deep desire for abundance, then you have to look at your thinking, your conversations, your actions, your relationships, your environment, and ask very honestly, are these the thoughts, the feelings, the words, and the actions, and the relationships, and the environment of a person who is really, really abundant? Or are my thoughts, feelings, words, actions, relationships more in integrity with a person who is struggling or who is in lack or who is trying to get abundance? You see, there's a very big difference.
Yeah.
And most of our lives are by default, not by design. Most of our lives are built to protect us. They're built to not get hurt, to not lose out, to not go broke, to not fail. They're not built to truly thrive and expand and access and actualize our full potential. Because that means really living on what I call the emerging edge, you know, living on the edge of your own creativity and not holding on to what's safe and secure and ensure. I remember one definition of enlightenment was you're falling through space. You have nothing to hold on to, but there's no bottom. And then it's this kind of availability and openness. And so you first have to know what it is. Then you have to cultivate a way of life that is in integrity with it. And I'll give one quick little metaphor also.
Sure.
Because we can understand, because some of this, again, can sound kind of woo-woo, because you can't see a lot of what I'm talking about. Mm. Just like you can't see the oak tree and the acorn, but nevertheless, it's there.
Yeah.
So it's like this, your potential, your abundance, your health, your wealth, your genius, all of that is actually already broadcasting energetically at a frequency right where you are. But until your frequency, which is dialed in through your mental, emotional, and physical, structures, until that is in alignment with that, you're not going to be able to experience with any permanent way that potential. So an analogy to that is right where you are inundated with broadcasts. And somewhere in that broadcasts, that soup of broadcasts, your favorite music is playing. Mm. But it's not manifest. It's not a part of your experience. But nevertheless, we can all understand that it is in the field of our space right now. You know, we know that it's not somewhere down in the street that I have to get to, that the broadcast is right here. So when we tune the dial of our radio so that the frequency of that receiver matches the frequency of that station where our music is playing, that station becomes manifest. As I like to say, you have a manifest station.
Nice.
And so that music now is a part of your experience. Now, where was the music before you tuned into it? It was right there.
Yeah.
You didn't have to run down the street. You didn't have to sit around and wait. You didn't have to build a band and create it. It's right there. And so fundamentally, and by the way, when I went back and studied all the teachings, religion, philosophy, this is what they're saying. They're saying heaven is within you. Get in touch with it. Nirvana is within you. The Tao is within you. They're all saying, wake up, people. Stop looking at the appearances and judging. Look within you and discover that everything you've been struggling and striving for, you've already got it.
Wow.
It's already here, but you got to develop the discernment, the soul senses, whatever you want to call it, to be able to see it and feel it and get in touch with it. And that's what I, of course, give people as the tools to do that.
Sure. Well, and then just on that, Derek, because obviously your defining moment, I guess, really helped play its part in enabling you to find that. So
yeah.
How does someone go about finding that without having to have some external defining moment? How can they create that within themselves? Is there a practical tip that you can give in order to help people to tune into that?
Absolutely. You know, as much as I love going down the rabbit hole, I'm also all about real world results, you know, and that shows I'm not living in a cave somewhere in the Himalayas. I'm, you know, out in the world where the action is. And So it's not as woo-woo or airy-fairy or as it seems. There's some very basic tools that most of you have probably heard of and even used, but maybe use them in a context of separation instead of unity. Mm. So like, for example, visualization is a tool we all understand, and we understand the power of it.
Yes.
The problem is that often when we're doing a visualization, we are doing it to make something happen. We are doing it to attract something. We're doing it to manipulate appearances. And so even if we manage to will ourselves into a bigger paycheck, we often find ourselves just broke at a higher income bracket.
Interesting.
Or we manifest that new house, but we find ourselves even less at home.
Mm.
Or we manifest the new job and end up with the same jerky boss just wearing a different uniform, right? And on it goes. Why? Because we've used this to manipulate things, but the sense of lack, separation, limitation, we bring it with us. And in fact, we tend to magnify it. So, but if you use visualization as one of the tools to begin to visualize your ideal life and feel what it feels like to be living that life, I break it down into the three pillars of actualizing your true potential, feeling, being, and doing. And so there's feeling qualities, like you might visualize yourself with a thriving business venture and all the ways that impacts your life and your family, et cetera. And it makes you feel joyful and it makes you feel powerful. And so then you write down those feeling qualities, because those are real. Those qualities are the real activation of your potential and are literally the substance of your future experience. But the image that you're holding on to may or may not be true, as we already talked about.
Yeah.
It may not be true that you're supposed to be whatever you're imagining right now. But the feeling of it is real and you cannot go wrong. That is your real potential being activated. So you write that down. Then you also notice, who am I being in this vision? So you're imagining your best case scenario, the best thing you can imagine in your life. Not a vision of what you think you should or could do, but if I was a genie and I said, if you could have the life of your dreams, truly fulfill your heart's desires and be, do, create, and contribute at the level that you deeply desire, and you could have that and it would work and you'd succeed, what would that be? And so you start to imagine that. Now you feel the feelings, you write those down, and you notice, if I was living that life, who would I be? How would I show up? And you start to notice in vision, I'm being more spontaneous. I'm being more generous. I'm being more playful. So you start to notice the being qualities, which are more active. There's something you can do. Mm. So I'm feeling more joy and I'm being more playful, just as an example, right? Yes. So now you have a quality of feeling and a quality of being. And you also might notice, what am I doing? And I don't just mean the one and done kind of doing, but like on a daily, weekly, regular basis in this new life, what are my habits of doing? So for example, let's say your big vision is you're a successful author. And you notice, I'm writing every day. Mm. Or I'm exercising every day. Or I'm, you know, whatever. And you notice there's a series of doings, of habits that are part of your the life design that you're living in that vision. So now you write that down. So now you've got a set of feeling qualities, being qualities, and a set of habits or doings. Mm. And now here's the most magnificent part. You don't have to wait for that vision to come true to begin to feel, be, and do, and be the person you're meant to be now. Not only do you not have to wait, but if you wait, you will forever keep that vision in the future, because whatever you're waiting for, you're waiting with, and you're weighing it down. And emergence is the ultultimate weight loss program. You know, nice. WAIT.
Yes.
And so, because life doesn't happen to you, it happens through you. Whatever's missing is what you're not generating, what you're not getting.
Wow.
If you want something new to come into your life, you have to let something new come out of you. Mm. So it's a complete reversal. Remember, everything emerges out of the seed. It doesn't come to the seed. The oak doesn't show up and start attaching itself to a seed. So now you know, feeling, being, doing. Now we get into the engineering part. So you go, okay, people, places, activities, and objects. That's your categories. People, places, activities, and objects. You go, okay, we're just working on a simple level. You take the quality of joy. What people, when I'm around, activate joy in me? Whether it's virtually, like listening to a call like this or a podcast, or literally being in Joe's presence or Susan's presence. What are the people?
Nice.
And you'll start to notice, yeah, when I'm with Joe or Susan, I feel so much more joy. And then you'll also notice you're not hanging around with them very often or as much as you want because you have certain excuses why you can't. Then you go, what are the places that when I'm in those places, it activates joy? And so you notice when I'm outdoors, when I'm hiking, or when I'm in a movie or at a museum, whatever it is. Or it could be a place in your home. Like when I'm sitting in this spot looking out over the garden, I feel joy.
Amazing.
Then you notice, what are the activities that bring you joy, that activate joy? And you might notice, well, when I'm singing, you know, but that's so impractical. I got to get busy, man. I got to get my job going. But you notice when I am just singing, or when I put on some music and just dance, or when I, you know, whatever, you'll notice there's activities that activate that quality,
yes.
Right? That, and then objects. These are objects of the sense. So like sounds, smells, visuals, you know, certain pictures, paintings, knickknacks, scents, like the smell of fresh baked bread or fresh cut grass or a particular song or whatever. Those are objects of the sense. Now you start to engineer these things back into your life as a way of life. And you also notice what are the people, places, objects, and activities that muffle or suppress or deactivate my joy.
Mm.
And you start to engineer them out as much as you can. There's another level to which where you can't just leave that job or kick your family members out of your life. How do you activate and bring more joy or whatever the quality is to that relationship? But initially, you might have to spend a little less time and have a little less conversations with those people that are not activating the qualities that are congruent with your higher vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so because you want to start having the conversations that are high-minded, that are about the vision and only. If you want more abundance in your life, but you're sitting around the water cooler talking about how bad the economy is, you are out of integrity with your soul. You are out of integrity with your vision.
Totally.
So that's the engineering part of our life. And you just start simple. Don't try to completely remodel your life in a day or a week, because you'll bump so hard up against your threshold that you won't be able to sustain it. And this is about building new habits of thinking, feeling, and being, so that ultimately becomes a permanent part of your life design. So you have the feeling, then you look at the being and you go, okay, we talked about playful maybe. So you look at your life now and you go, what would it look like for me to be more playful? If I was to be more playful in my life right now, what would that look like? Or maybe it's at your job or with your business or in a relationship. If you sincerely sit with that question, you will start to get guidance on where the quality of playfulness or whatever it is, generosity, where that's actually trying to emerge. It's been knocking on the door, but you've continued to go to the door, look to the people and say, no, I'm too busy. I can't deal with you today. But it's been trying to come out. That quality has been trying to break out. Now you're consciously courting it and you're consciously activating it. So you start bringing the play to your job, to your business in unique ways. And then finally, the doings. You notice, I exercise 3 times a week in this vision. I'm writing on a regular basis. I'm, you know, going out and connecting with people. And you start to then literally put that on your calendar. You know, every day I'm going to write X amount of words or pages. Every day I'm going to exercise X amount of minutes. And you start building the habits of the kind of person you would be if you were already living your dream life. And you put all that together, and that is the emergeneering process.
Wow.
Or at least the basis of it, the first
yes.
part of it.
Yes.
The first three levels, which is see the completed vision, cultivate the congruent conditions, and create the quantum plan.
Awesome.
So you put all that together, and now you have the foundation of really regaining control over the momentum of your life. Because this is natural to a child. The child naturally gravitates towards the people, places, things, and activities that are in integrity with the child's own emerging potential. And then parents and authorities and teachers condition the child out of their natural ability to do that.
Yep.
And teach a child to move towards the people, places, things, and activities that will make you feel valid and worthy and safe and secure and loved. And now you lose track of your inner compass. And you get what we get now, where people are running around trying to appease and control and manipulate and not get hurt. So now we're going to take back control of the natural process of growth. And really miracles can happen when you start to do that.
Wow. I want to thank you for sharing some of the practical steps there as well. You know, as part of this transformation series, there's real steps that people can go through just from listening to this episode. So I'd encourage everyone listening to take the time to go back and get out your notepad and go through that exercise that will set your year up for absolute, you know, whatever it is you're looking to bring into your life. Those steps alone will help you create a radical shift in your life this year.
Absolutely. And I want to say something else, because there's an important distinction. From the only thing anybody is ever really going after is a feeling, is a state of being.
Mm.
Whether you think it's money, relationships, jobs, if you scratch the surface of that, you'll see it's because I want to feel a certain way, like this old Zen parable where the guy comes up to a Zen farmer and says, you know, can I have a job. And the Zen farmer says, you can have a job, but I'm not going to pay you. What do you really need? And what do you really want? And the man's like, okay, well, I need the money because, you know, that's what I need. So can I have some money? And the Zen farmer's like, well, I'll give you the money, but you can't spend it. What do you really need? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I need the money to buy food. Oh, okay, I'll give you some food, but you can't eat it. What do you really need? The guy's like, well, I need to eat the food so that, you know, I'll be able to know that I'm okay, so I won't have to be afraid of starving. And he finally got down to what I really want, what I really am craving, what I'm really hungry for is to feel that I'm okay, mm-hmm. that I'm enough, that I'm safe, that so that I can finally relax and feel peace and feel connection and feel joy and feel freedom. And the master goes, yes, that is what you really need, is that deeper connection, that feeling of peace and freedom. Unfortunately, I can't give that to you because you've already got it.
Wow.
So when you keep breaking it down, you see that's all we're really going after. You look at the throngs of the masses on the city streets, they're all going after a state ultimately of connection, of freedom, of peace. And the good news is that that's a complete inside job. What we've been conditioned into believing is that we have to purchase our peace and our freedom through some outer condition. So why am I saying all this? Because the quicker and the sooner you can realize what I just said is true and set up your year so that you understand that at the end of the year, what matters most is not how many possessions you have, but how much greater possession you have of yourself.
Mm, wow.
That's what makes the difference. At the end of the day, at the end of a year, at the end of a lifetime, what's going to matter most to you is how much more of you you've reclaimed, how much more of your innate power and joy and peace and love and connection and inspiration. And that is a complete inside job. So as you're setting up the big goals, the outer goals, which is fine, keep why I call it a quantum plan is that you have to also be aware of what are the inner goals. Why do I really want to have the money, the business, the name, fame, and fortune? It's because that'll make me feel peaceful, joyful, powerful, confident, worthy, etc. Beautiful. So now that's your real goal every day. Even though you'll do all the actions to achieve the outer goal, in every day you want to remind yourself, my goal at the end of this day is to have a little bit more uncovering, discovering, embodying of joy or of peace or of a sense of my self-worth and value. That's really what I'm setting out to do today, even while I'm making all those cold calls or writing my book or whatever I might be doing. At the end of the day, I look back and say, is there a little more joy, a little more peace, a little more freedom, a little more, then I know that's a good day. Even if I didn't get the job or get the client. And if you will truly do that, as you embody those qualities, as you embody more joy, more peace, more gratitude, more freedom, because those qualities are literally the substance of your entire reality. Everything in your life right now is built out of the energy of that, those qualities you've activated. Then, and this is not woo-woo, this is also quantum physics. Then you will discover that the universe keeps giving you experiences that reflect the state that you've activated internally. So you live in a state of gratitude. Life will keep giving you reasons to be grateful. And it will look like it's showing up causing gratitude, but you'll know you're radiating gratitude and that's creating an experience that reflects that.
Mm.
And your life will become more and more in order, more and more on track. And when you get to the destination, you get that big paycheck or you get that money, you'll know your source of joy and power isn't in that paycheck. You'll know that you brought joy and power with you into that job or that opportunity. You didn't go into it to get it.
Wow.
And now you're free. And now you can be your authentic self and share your authentic truth and really take a stand in a place of power. But as long as you think it's coming from someone or something outside of you, you will forever be a slave to conditions. So as we're setting up the course for the new year, I just think it's very important you make those distinctions between the outer goal and the inner goal. And you remind yourself on a regular basis what you're really building. And what you're building is a field of dreams inside.
Wow.
And then the people will show up outside.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Derek. Derek, so we've really covered kind of the first three principles in some real depth, which I really appreciate. So I know that the listeners will be itching to find out more about the remaining four. I know there's seven steps. So would you mind sharing how the listeners can find out more about your work and your book?
Absolutely. And before we jump, well, yeah, and I'd love to come back and just talk briefly about the sixth step, which is about embracing what appears broken, because this is a really big revelation for people. But yeah, if you want to, what I want to give you guys is a free course, an e-course, audio course on the law of emergence. So if you just go to lawofemergence.com, you can grab that and begin to apply and really learn more about this principle and how it works in your life. And if you want to, you know, get the whole kind of breakdown of the seven steps, what I call the emergeneering process, you can also grab my best-selling book, Emergence. And if you can get that where books are sold, or if you go to myemergencebook.com, you can get a copy through that. And then I'm going to give you about $1,500 to $1,800 in additional programs and bonus coaching. So you can really get the support you need to get real world results. And then finally, I also have a podcast. It's just called Emergence, and you can get dozens of trainings on how to apply this in various ways in your life. So those are some ways: the Emergence podcast, lawofemergence.com, or my Emergence book. You'll have plenty of material to dig into and to, you know, get very real, very practical results. I mean, like I said, I'm an entrepreneur. I built a seven-figure global business. This is very practical. It's not just about philosophizing, although as you can tell, I love to do that too.
Mm-hmm. You said you wanted to touch briefly on the sixth part, did you?
Yeah. So just briefly, you know, it's important because a lot of people are struggling. They're struggling financially. They're struggling emotionally. We all have our challenges, and the way we've been conditioned around self-improvement and success strategies has often been that I need to get rid of all the bad stuff. I need to get rid of all the hard parts. I need to get rid of that part of me that's greedy, stingy, selfish, angry, sad, mad, whatever, and replace it with happy, powerful, confident, turn that frown upside down, you know, all of that kind of belief. And what's important to understand is that that's actually an act of violence to try to cut those parts of you out or repress them or deny them or ignore them. It's akin to the soil that makes up all of the basically is the ground of all creation on this earth. What is the soil made of? It's made of everything that has died and rotted and decayed. So the soil is literally dark, dank, smelly, dirty, yucky substance of everything that has died. I mean, it's the most horrible idea to imagine, and yet that is the very foundation of all life on this planet. So if a seed tried to grow the way we've learned, it would, you know, pray away, affirm away, or just blow away all the dirt. And then it would stand in a reality where there's no dirt in sight, where it's clean and clear, and it would be triumphant. I've done it. I've gotten rid of all the dark, dirty, yucky parts of life. And the sun would come out and shine its light and burn that seed to a crisp. So thankfully, the seed doesn't get rid of all the dirt. It buries itself in it. Mm. And it turns it not into a tomb, but into a womb. Wow. And now the light shines, and it activates all of that that's in the darkness. And the seed begins to grow. But how does the seed grow? It doesn't just grow up, up, up to the light. It grows down, down, down into the dark. And the deeper the roots, the taller the shoots, and the richer the fruits. So those parts of us that we're struggling and grappling with, those parts of us we hate, those parts of us we just wish nobody will ever find out, those parts of us we're working so hard to get rid of, the lazy, the irresponsible, the crazy, the weird. All of that is the soil of our life that we actually need to embrace. When you embrace your selfish self, you don't become more selfish. You master the ability to have great self-care. Mm. Mm-hmm. You master the ability to have healthy boundaries. When you embrace your anger, you don't become a raving lunatic or a bitch or a jerk. And a lot of women struggle with this the most. And I say you have to embrace your inner diva bitch, because when you embrace her, and the women love that, when you embrace her, that you don't become that, you finally get access to your power. And so on and on, you know, when you embrace your freak or your irresponsible self, you become able to break the rules and the boundaries and the shackles of limitation and be a revolutionary, be a visionary. But we don't understand that. So we work really, really hard to be better people, to be nice guys and girls, to be helpers and people pleasers and do-gooders, or we work really, really hard to be successful and not a failure, to be wealthy and not poor. But all of those parts you're trying to not be are literally creating all kinds of self-sabotaging experiences, procrastination, stagnation, a lot of the things we've talked about. So what I call shadow work. But when you embrace these parts of you you've been denying, running from, afraid of, judgmental of, most of what you've been struggling to achieve in your life, you'll start to have access to. And when you don't embrace them, you will attract people in your life that will push your buttons all day long. That's your shadows talking. Yeah. And you will find yourself constantly feeling like a victim of conditions. And so, we don't have time to go down completely on how to work with it. But my invitation to you is to begin to, if you can identify one of those shadows, you can go to derekrydell.com/shadow process. And I actually get a downloadable process to walk yourself through it. Wow. I go much more in depth in my book about it, but at the very simplest level, if there's a part of you that you hate, a part of you you're trying to get rid of, what I invite you to do is just begin to do a practice of actually embracing that part of you and asking that part of you, what does it need from you for it to feel finally seen and understood and accepted? What does it need from you? And if you'll do that and start journaling about that, you'll start to hear things like, I need you to take better care of yourself. I need you to have that hard conversation and take a stand for yourself. I need you to whatever. And you'll start to get guidance again on this next stage of your own life that's trying to emerge, but you've been pushing it away and denying it. So this is one of the most transformative aspects of emergence that I've watched lifelong struggles and challenges go away in a matter of sometimes in minutes if the realization happens. But it's a radical reversal of a lot of the stuff, because we're using so much energy to resist and repress these parts of us. And when you get them embraced, all of that energy becomes available to create and to produce and to succeed. And so I hope you guys will check that out. And I hope that supports you in learning how to love and accept and embrace all of you and discover that there's all kinds of gold and riches waiting for you there.
Incredible. Incredible, Derek. I've got one final question for you to end the show. Ask every single guest, what does being unstoppable mean to you?
Yeah. So to me, being unstoppable is so much about what we've been talking about. It means being more anchored, the locus of power anchored within you, being less, no longer leaning on resources, but leaning on the source. Mm. And the source of all power, all creation, everything you could ever need is in you. And the more you are anchored in that, no matter what happens in the world, you cannot be stopped. No matter the economy turns sideways, the relationship, whatever, you are, because you're no longer getting your power from the world. You're no longer getting your validation from the world. You're getting it from the only place that ever really existed, within yourself. And you become unshakable, unbreakable, unsinkable, and unstoppable.
Wow. 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 Derek, thank you so much for sharing the law of emergence and your story and kindly sharing it, all the gifts that you've shared with the audience today. I believe you are truly unstoppable. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your time here today and to kick off the transformation series this January. So thank you so much for sharing so openly and being so authentic and vulnerable. I really appreciate that, Derek.
You're welcome, Dan. It's been my honor and pleasure, and my intention and vision I'm holding for all of you is that this next year now unfolding is going to be your best year yet.
Wow, what a mind-blowing start. I'm absolutely so grateful to have connected with Derek and have brought him to the show for you guys today. I want to say a personal thank you to Joan Ward, who introduced me to Derek and his work and also connected me with his team. So thank you, Joan. If you would like to bring a specific guest to the show, then please do get in touch. You can email me through the contact form on danjgregory.com. I do welcome introductions and referrals from all of my listeners to the show. In addition, I want to make this the most impactful podcast in the personal development industry in 2017. So I truly welcome your feedback. What would you like to hear more of? What would you like me to add or take away? Please do get involved, and together we can build a powerful community of unstoppable entrepreneurs around the world. Now, I'm sure your eyes are firmly turned to 2017. We are here, we're underway. And before we finish up today, I want to make an important confession. It's already the 5th of January at the time of recording, and I haven't set my goals for the new year yet, at least not concretely. Shock. I want to be very clear that this is absolutely not the unstoppable way. I do pride myself on being ready well in advance of the new year, but this year I'm way behind. However, I'm not going to stress about it. It's happened. And if you think logically about the transition between one year and the next, it's not really any different from transitioning from one day to the next. It's just that we use a year to arbitrarily measure and track our performance on a 365-day scale. But that is the way we do it. So with all this said, I don't want to go into this year unprepared. So the fact that I'm feeling unprepared at the minute is challenging for me. So I will be spending time this weekend to turn this around fast and get ready for the next 90 days, getting totally clear on my commitments for 2017. This is the unstoppable way, turning it around fast, recognizing that the challenge is in place and overcoming it effectively with minimal fuss. So if you are also not yet fully prepared for the year, don't sweat it. Tune in on Monday, where I will be sharing a simple process that will give you a unique perspective on how to make 2017 your best year yet. I'm sure your planning is well underway and you're ready to hit the ground running, but this session will look at the whole annual goal setting, New Year's resolution thing from a totally different perspective. And my intention is to make you think very differently about the usual goal setting processes that we all tend to go through. So, in order to make sure you do not miss that episode, tune in on Monday and subscribe to the show to make sure you never miss a word. And please do share this episode. Play your part in helping others to become unstoppable in 2017. Until next time, go out there, unleash your greatness, build your empire, make your impact, and live your ultimate life. You are unstoppable.